ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं पूजयामुदीरये। The 27th verse from the 3rd chapter of Bhagavad Gita. I will speak a little bit about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, how it is explained by Sri Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. So this is the verse 27. Let's chant together. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah ahankara vimudatma kartaha miti manyate. Translation. Prakrite of material nature. Kriyamanani being done. Gunaihi by the modes. Karmani activities. Sarvashaha, all kinds of. Ahankara vimudha, bewildered by false ego. Atma, the soul. Karta, doer. Aham, I. Iti, thus. Manyate, he thinks. Translation. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in reality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Purport. Two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person is in false ego, takes it all credit for doing everything independently, and that is the symptom of his nescience. He does not know that his gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of God in Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Hrishikesha, or the master of the senses of the material body. For due his long misuse of the senses in sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasaha kankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in reality carried out by the three modes of material nature. (Clears throat) Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudeva Gaura Bhaktavrinda.
Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So I'll speak a little bit about this verse, which explains the problem which every one of us faces in the material nature. We all heard about this karma. And here Krishna is explaining the nature of the consciousness which creates karma. Karma is not something inevitable in a sense. Sometimes people take karma some music on the background. In India there are little lizards, and they live in on the walls, and sometimes they do special sound, tick tick. If they do the special sound, it means that something which was said before is confirmed. So in the West, the equivalent of these lizards is the mobile phones. When the mobile phones make special sound, it means that it's confirmed. So, in any case, Krishna is explaining very interestingly, the root cause of karma. Because karma, the very concept of karma, the very idea of karma, is stemming from our consciousness. One of the essential points of philosophy of Krishna consciousness of Bhagavad Gita is that you can still act in this material world. Moreover, you should continue to act in the material world. But your action will have completely different quality. It will belong to a different, entirely different category. Your action will not produce negative results. In most cases, we, while acting in this material nature, create so many results which we don't even know. And later on, they will come to us and we will regret bitterly. Sometimes people say, why did it happen to me? What have I done? But please be sure that you have done a lot. You deserved it. The law of karma is unavoidable in a sense. And if something is happening with us, it basically means that we did something wrong. But the mechanism of karma is not so simple. And even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that nobody understands entirely how it works. So many people are engaged in trying to solve this problem or somehow or other understand how the subtle laws of nature work. And in fact, the whole science, the gigantic material science, is nothing else but an attempt to understand the law of karma. The law of karma is the general principle of cause and effect. And in science, they are trying to find the particular cause for particular effect. The general principle is clear, but how it works in reality, it's very difficult to understand because the whole system is extremely complicated. We're dealing with this system of cause and effect. And little cause may create such a huge effect on a very great distance from you. For example, you could cause some pain to somebody. And according to law of karma, this pain will come to you. But not exactly the same pain which you created. Because you inflicted some pain to one living entity. And this living entity, being pained inside, in the heart, will inflict pain to some others. We know how it works very well. Somebody spoiled our mood, and we are there to spoil everyone else's mood. Because we are in a bad mood. we kind of transmit our moods or our consciousness. Or sometimes how it happens, and this is also a famous psychological phenomenon, when somebody is abused as a child, and somebody suffered during his childhood, then his whole life, subconsciously, he will try to do the same to others. He doesn't even know how it works, but the same kind of thing will be doing. So the original cause of the pain which was created or inflicted to this child will be multiplied many, many folds. And all the pain which he created in the first place will come back to him sometime in the future. And he will, you know, and he will say, why, what did I do, what's wrong? But this is the law of karma. And law of karma is, first of all, very difficult to understand. And second of all, it is unavoidable in one sense. But it would be totally useless even to speak about it if it was unavoidable in a true sense. And the whole point of Bhagavad Gita and philosophy of Bhagavad Gita is that you can counteract your karma. You can nullify your karma. You can get rid of the karma. You can still be here in this material world, but at the same time, you will not create any new karma in your life. And exactly how to do this is explained in this verse and purport. In the verse itself, Krishna explains the bewildered consciousness of a living being. He says, vimudatma. Vimudatma means totally, utterly bewildered. It means that somebody is really not in his right mind. And he says that one who thinks that everything depends on me, kartaham, I'm the doer. Everything depends on me. You know, I'm great, I'm big, I really have to rely only on myself. Everything is really based upon my actions and my intelligence. This person will get the full portion of karma because of his bewilderment. In reality, the right consciousness, which is hinted upon in this verse, is that we should understand that yes, I am acting in this world, but it's not only I who is acting. There are so many other causes which are behind my action. In the end of Bhagavad Gita, the five primary causes will be described. And the main cause, which we always somehow or other miss in our life, is God. He is also the cause of everything which is going on. We are tiny cause, we are small cause. Little tiny living entity within the heart, jiva soul desires something. But when the jiva soul is bewildered, the jiva soul says, everything depends on me. And it is said, there is a saying in India, that God laughs two times. The first time he laughs when somebody says, I will make my plan. And at that time, God in the heaven starts laughing and laughing and laughing. Because he knows that it doesn't depend on your plans. And the second time he laughs when somebody says, I will never die. And God says, yes, I know. But in any case, the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita is simple in one sense, in theory. And it's difficult in reality in the sense that the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita teaches us to consider the primary cause of everything which we see, God, at every moment of our time, at every moment of our life. And we have the tendency, and we will still have the tendency to forget about this. Because this consciousness of self-reliance is very great. There is a little story which illustrates this point. It's a very nice story about one saintly person in India, about one sadhu. He is kind of, you know, sadhus, saintly persons, they're not very modern in one sense. They're a little backwards. At least this is the common understanding. So this sadhu, he had a big load of his things and he was traveling in a train. He came And he sat down in the train. He found his place, his seat number. And he sat and he put his suitcase or whatever basket he had upon his head. And his neighbors, they were watching him. And they said, "Swamiji, what are you doing? Are you crazy? You know, why do you keep this load upon your head? You know, why don't you put it down?" He said, No. I only bought one ticket. This is ticket for myself. You know, so this load has to be on my head." He said, "You know, are you crazy? You know, this is anyway, the train is taking us, you know. It doesn't matter whether you have it on your head or you have it here. It's anyway the train which is taking you to the destination." And he said, "No, I'm not crazy. It's you who are crazy. Because it's you always think the same. You always think that everything depends on me and you keep the burden on your head. Whereas it's God who is taking you to your destination. It's not you." The point of this little story is to illustrate this very moment of our philosophy. Is that when we take the complete responsibility upon our shoulders, then the complete responsibility is upon our shoulders. Whereas when we understand that there is another cause behind every action or every event in this world, then gradually, the burden will be relieved. As soon as we have this false ego. And the false ego is the main problem. The false ego, ahankara, in Vedic philosophy or in Sanskrit, is this consciousness that I'm the doer. Everything depends on me. And as long as this I, ahan, is in the center of our life, then our life is miserable. Because we will have to really bear the full, complete responsibility of everything. Whereas if we understand that, you know, there are so many causes behind each and every of my actions. And in reality, it's God who is really working through me. Then our life will become much easier. You know, we have to understand that, yes, there is a law of karma. Yes, we got this body. And we're acting upon this body. But this body is also working according to the modes of material nature. You know, we don't understand to which extent we are programmed. We are programmed by material nature. And this programming is extremely deep. And if we don't understand how much we are programmed, we will continue to be bewildered. You know, like for example, you know, some of you are born in Germany, and you're programmed in a certain way. While coming here, I was asking Gaur Nataraj Prabhu, you know, should we be in time? We are in Germany, you know, we should be right in time. You know, and I'm from Russia. In Russia, nobody is in time. You know, so it's just, it doesn't matter. Of course, they told me that nowadays in Germany, nobody's on time either. So. But the point is that we are programmed. We are programmed by the place where we were born. We are programmed by our, you know, upbringing. We are programmed by our previous karma. We are programmed in so many ways. And actually, there are so many factors in our life which are acting, which are forcing us to act, which are more or less create the scenery of our life. And the correct consciousness or correct understanding is to understand this simple point that not everything depends on me and not to really be overstressed by this consciousness. Because, and this is a very important and very practical point of our philosophy, if we think that everything depends on me, it's the cause of constant stress. Everything depends on me, yeah, I have to do. You know, but what will happen if something fails? You know, this will be a failure for myself. This is a cause of constant pressure. And the stress is one of the main diseases in this modern world. People are overstressed. You know, they're under so much pressure. And this pressure is not coming from outside. This pressure, paradoxically enough, is coming from inside. We are creating this pressure, you know, I, you know. And I means I have to be successful. Because if I'm the doer, then my I depends on my success. If I'm a failure, you know, people, they take it so dramatically, so tragically. Some failure is there, you know, and then their whole life is finished. Why? Because their I depends on the success of their actions. Whereas in reality, it does not depend. Just take it easy. Relax. You please continue to act. And this is again the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. We should be very active. We should be very active. But the actions should be done in proper consciousness. And this proper consciousness is dependence on God. It's the understanding that God is behind every action. And ultimately, if He wants me to fail, my failure will be my success. If I understand that failure is God-given, it is sent to me by God. And if I celebrate this failure, because it's given by God, then I will be happy even amidst of the bitterest failure. I will be very happy. I will celebrate this. Actually, just today, I was thinking about a little example from my own life, which is kind of interesting in this regard. Near St. Petersburg, and there is a very beautiful palace of Tsars, created by Peter the Great, and Peterhof, it's a German name, because Peter the Great was a fan of Germany. So, and there is a lot of fountains there in this place. It's a very beautiful place. There are hundreds and hundreds of different fountains. And one of the fountains is, there are some fountains which is like jokes, you know, especially for children, for some pleasure. And one of the fountains of this kind of fountains is consists of different stones. And usually children, they love this, because the idea of this fountain is that children are running around and they're pushing some stone, and all of a sudden there's some water coming from the ground, you know, and everyone is, you know, completely wet, and they, you know, all the children are running, you know, outside, and then they come again and they're trying to find which stone is the cause of this water, you know. So the idea is that, and everyone is under this impression, if I push the right stone, then the water will come. And it's a fun, you know, children like it, and, you know, and I remember myself when I was a child, I was running, and I always thought, you know, this is the stone. I pushed it and the water comes. Recently I was there, and I was watching how the children are still playing and, you know, running and yelling and, you know, in complete ecstasy, you know, I found the right stone, this is the stone. And then I noticed there is a bench nearby, and one old man is sitting there, and there is a little button underneath on the earth, and he pushes this button, and then the water comes. But all the children are under complete impression that this all depends on them, and they're running. And, you know. And there is an old man sitting there pushing the button. So. And I was thinking that it's exactly our life. You know, we're all running around. And we all think, this all depends on me. I just have to find the right button to push. And, you know, sometimes we have this feeling, yeah, I know. I know the secret. You know, sometimes people, they write big books. This is the book about the secret of success. This is, you know, this is how you do this. And if you do this like this, you will for sure get success. And other people, they will get very excited about it, and they do the same. And it just doesn't work. You know, exactly like all these children when they playing, sometimes they push the, you know, the stone and it works. Another time they push the same stone, it doesn't work. Because there is an old man who is sitting there. So, in the same way, we are like children. And we are playing, and we have this childish understanding that everything depends on us. But there is an old man sitting behind. He is doing this. He is pushing the button. You know? But at the same time, we are under this illusion. We are saying that, you know, it all depends on us. That it all really completely depends on us. And therefore, Krishna says, Ahankara Vimudatma, this Atma or the soul is bewildered. And the soul thinks, you know, it depends on me. But in reality, as Krishna says, it depends not on you. Of course, here he says, it depends on the material nature. And he doesn't mention even God, because this is the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita. But later on he will say that the proper consciousness, which does not create karma, is the consciousness when somebody understands it all depends on God. You still act. And the commentator of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada, he explains what kind of consciousness it is. He explains that the consciousness, the proper consciousness, is that I got this body, and who gave me the body? It was God. Right? It is created from material nature, but ultimately even material nature is working under somebody's supervision. There is a consciousness behind everything. You know, even the material nature is not independent. The material nature is working under God's control. And if we have this understanding that I have this body, I have this mind, my intelligence, and by having mind and body I'm acting, and ultimately I have to use my mind and body for the service of God. This is the proper consciousness which does not create bad consequences. In our mold, in our world, in our present setup, in the modern understanding, people too much rely upon themselves. And this creates not only bad consequences for themselves, but for everyone else. Because of too much dependence on our own intelligence, and because of not considering the Lord or God who is behind everything, we create such a mess in this world. Recently, there is a very interesting and recent example for this. I was in Dubai. And in Dubai this spring, everyone was very much concerned about the global warming. You know, because this winter was practically, you know, there was no winter. And everyone was very concerned. And in Dubai it's so hot. And in Dubai the people thought, you know, if it will be even hotter than now, you know, what will happen with us? So they told me that there is a hope for all humanity. And now I will describe you the hope to make you shake in your boots. You know, somebody told me that scientists finally, they found the solution for this global warming. Please listen carefully, because by really understanding this example, you will understand how foolish we are and what we are doing. The solution which he described to me is horrifying. It's horrible. They said, you know, the global warming is why? Because of the sun. And sun is giving too much heat. So there are two solutions. The two solutions they suggested. One solution is to push the earth a little further away from the sun. They already found some satellite or whatever, and if we do some manipulation with this satellite, then the earth will be pushed away from the sun, so there will be no global warming. I mean, I really hope that they will not do this. There is another solution which is proposed. I mean, it's serious. They take grants of millions and billions of dollars and use these grants for these crazy solutions. Another solution which they propose is that, of course, the heat is coming from the sun. Now, the problem is too much heat is coming from the sun. We have to somehow or other minimize the amount of heat. So, one way of minimizing it is to reflect the sunshine back to the space. And how you can reflect it? If you put some white cover on the earth, then the white color will reflect the sunshine back into the space. So, how to do this? It's very simple. There is enough snow on this earth to reflect back the sunshine, but the problem is that too much forest. Because when the forest is there, the snow, the snow doesn't reflect the sunshine. Because the forest is not white, the forest is black and green. So the proposal is that you should cut all the forest on the northern part of the earth. There will be more snow and there will be no global warming. You know, this is the... Yeah, I know. But this is exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, because he says, Ahankara vimudatma. People become crazy because of too much reliance upon themselves. They just think, I am the doer. Everything depends on me. With my intelligence, I will solve all the problems. With my skills, I will solve all the problems. And therefore they create karma. This is how karma is created. And this is how karma is aggravated. More and more and more and more. And the only solution, not only for us individually, but for the whole world. This is the solution. The solution for the whole world is to recognize that there is an old man who is sitting behind and who has great intelligence and who knows what he is doing. And he is acting, and he is very active in everyone's of us lives, in everyone's life. He is not some idle person. He is an active principle in our life. And if we recognize this, then the logical conclusion is that how we should act? We should act in the spirit of service. How should I act? I should act because I'm the servant. Who gave me this body? It's God. Who gave me this mind? It's God. Why I was born in this particular situation? Because of God. What should I do in this particular situation? I should serve. Nobody can change this principle. This is an eternal truth. No matter how much we try, we're still the servant. No matter how much we do, whatever we will do, we still remain the servants. And if we have this consciousness of the servant, then the bonus of it, the side effect of it, the glorious side effect, first of all, we should do it because it's true. Because it's according to the construction of this world. Because this is what we are supposed to do. But the side effect of this, very good side effect of this, bonus of it, is that we don't create karma with this consciousness. Whatever we will do, we will not create karma. Whatever we will do will not create bad consequences for us and for everyone else. Because this is the consciousness which is beneficial for everyone. You know, and this is the very strong point of any real spiritual philosophy. Not only Krishna consciousness. Whatever spiritual philosophy you take, if it's a proper Christianity, you will find this. And of course, in Krishna consciousness, it's perhaps described in more details. It is described later on that this consciousness, this wrong consciousness of the enjoyer, has the two parts. This false ego, which bewilders us, which makes us go crazy, has two parts. One part is, I'm the doer, I'm karta. And this part of our false ego forces us to think that we are in control. Everything depends on me. I'm in control. I'm the Lord. You know, and everyone is trying to put a little fence around his area of control. Here I am the Supreme Lord. I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead of this apartment number such and such. You know, and nobody can say something against me in this particular area. This is one thing. But then the second thing, or second wrong consciousness, or second aspect of false ego, is that I am the enjoyer. When I am doing, then the natural conclusion of the bewildered soul is that I have the right to enjoy the fruits of my actions. And I'm the enjoyer, and you know. And this twofold false ego destroys the world. It destroys us, it destroys our lives, and ultimately it destroys the world. So the point of this verse very important point and a very important lesson of this particular verse is that we have to try to relinquish our false ego. The false identity is that I'm in control. The real identity is that I belong to God and He's in control. I belong to Him. I'm connected with Him. And I'm always the servant. And this is eternal truth. And we're trying to realize this truth to make it go deep within our consciousness by chanting the Holy Name. The chanting of the Holy Name has a very deep significance, because at present moment our consciousness is self-centered. And in the center of this consciousness there is us or our name. We want everyone else to chant our name. You notice how we like when somebody pronounces our name. We are very careful, very attentive. When Gornataraj was introducing me, I was very conscious. And I was very curious, you know, what kind of glory of myself he's chanting now. And everyone is the same. Everyone has this kind of, you know, false understanding that, you know, I have to be in the center, and it means that my name is there. So what we're trying to do, we're trying to change our consciousness from self-centered consciousness to God-centered consciousness. And we're doing it by the means of chanting God's name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And it gradually, slowly but surely, changes our consciousness, changes our heart, changes the very center of our life. Gradually it will remind us all the time. It's a simple method to remind us that God is in control, that everything depends on Him, and I am His servant, and whatever I do for Him, and He wants me to succeed, I will succeed. If He wants me to fail, I will fail. And this is the glory. When somebody only depends on himself, and whatever he does is bad. Whether he succeeds or whether he fails, it's bad. It's ultimately bad. It's ultimately useless. But if somebody is doing something for Krishna, and he is very firm in this consciousness, whether he will succeed or whether he will fail, this will be his victory. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is said that everyone is born here in this world to be defeated. Parabhavas tavat abodha jatas. He said that everyone is born to be defeated. But there is a way to be victorious. There is a way to counteract or to conquer over the influence of material nature. And this way is simple. For that we have to always remind ourselves and remember that I am the servant always. I am the servant of God. And for that, I should chant His name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Thank you very much. This is my little explanation of philosophy. Is there any questions? Yes.
Could you say some more words about what it means to, if you're born to be defeated? I mean, really,
okay. Because we will all die, and because we will all get old, and because we will all have diseases. We are born to be defeated. Because everyone, when he's young, he has this, you know, understanding that somehow or other, you know, I will make it. But nobody made it so far. because everyone dies, everyone gets diseases, and everyone gets old. You know, the first sign of this, of our defeat, is some gray hairs. I remember very clearly when I was a child, my mother got first gray hairs. And I remember her standing in front of the mirror and plucking out the gray hairs. Because we don't want to get old. You know? It's something really unnatural, you know. But the signs are coming. The gray hairs are coming. This is the first signs of defeat. And there will be ultimate defeat. You know, people are fighting so much. Right on the way here, somebody told me that there are so many 100-year-old people in Germany that it's enough to, you know, fill up Hanover with these people. Hanover will be a very nice and exciting city if only 100-year-old people live here. Even though they prolong the life till 100 years old, so what? You know, ultimately everyone dies. The medicine is trying, and this is victory. They say this is our victory. But what kind of victory it is? Everyone is destined to be defeated. But there is a way to be victorious. It means basically that we are born to be immortal. The human life, the peculiarity, the special thing about human life is that we can become immortal. We can realize immortality, which is our inheritance. By nature we are immortal, but we can realize really understand our immortality when we are properly situated in human consciousness or in God consciousness. So this is what victory means. It is also very beautifully described in Christianity. It is said that Jesus Christ died to conquer death. His death is special because it's the way to conquer death. But in reality, every one of us is born to conquer death. But how we conquer death? By changing our consciousness. Now our consciousness is totally dependent on the material body. And this dependence on the material body we have to relinquish by being dependent on God. And this way we will avoid the inevitable defeat and obtain the final victory.
You told in the lecture that it is not correct to think about ourselves as about enjoys.
Yes.
But we cannot live without happiness. Everybody is searching for happiness.
Happiness and enjoyment is not the same thing. We have to be happy, but when we, when we put on the same platform happiness and enjoyment, then we're making a very grave mistake. Now, some people who do some austerities, they may be very happy. Sometimes people, they go to some monastery or whatever, and they live a very austere life, but they're completely happy. And at the same time, you can see people who have all kinds of enjoyment, and at the end they commit suicide. Because they're totally frustrated and not happy. There is a very big mistake of modern civilization which equals the enjoyment and happiness. Enjoyment is necessary, but enjoyment, if we too much after enjoyment, it will have an opposite effect. Every enjoyment has the misery behind it. We invite enjoyment. Please come. You're welcome. But behind every enjoyment, there is a little shadow of misery. And by inviting enjoyment, we also invite miseries. Whereas happiness does not depend on this. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a very interesting recipe of happiness. It is said that everyone can be happy. Everyone can become happy immediately, instantly, without too much endeavors. The only thing which one has to do to become happy, he has to stop searching for happiness. And then immediately he will become happy. There is a nice story in this connection from Chinese lore. Then there was one old man living in a village. And he was a very miserable man, and he was very nasty. Because he was so miserable, he was always, you know, trying to make everyone else miserable, and, you know, then nobody has seen him happy. You know, and he was poor, and he was really wretched. But one day, there was a news throughout the village that this particular man has become happy, and nobody could believe. You know, so all the villagers came to his house and they saw he's smiling. for the first time in his long life, he was 90 years old, and he was smiling, totally happy. So the villagers asked him, "My dear sir, what happened to you? Why you're so happy?" He said, "Because the whole life I wanted to become happy, and finally I understood that it will not happen with me, so I gave up this hope and I became happy." Instantaneously. Because happiness is inside. Happiness is actually the condition of our heart. And the mistake which human beings do, they're trying to find happiness outside. You know, they're so busy finding happiness outside instead of trying to search for the happiness inside. There is a nice story from Bible about old lady who lost her coin. She lost her coin and she was looking under some, you know, light. So somebody was passing by and asked, "What are you looking for?" She said, "I lost my coin. I lost my coin." So somebody asked, this man asked her, the passerby asked her, "Why are you looking, where did you lose it?" She said, "I lost it somewhere there." He asked her, "Why are you looking for the coin here?" She said, "Because it's dark there and it's light here. Therefore, I'm looking here." So in the same way, we lost our happiness, there is no doubt about it. But we have lost our happiness inside. And we are trying to find our happiness outside. Why? Because it's light, because everyone is good. But we lost the happiness within the heart. So we have to try to find the happiness within. And this happiness is there. God is there, Krishna is there, he's dancing, he's playing his flute. He's there. But we are trying to find happiness in enjoyment, whereas it's not happiness, it's just some shadow.
Like normally, when we take initiation, right, we bow before a spiritual master, right, okay, I will chant, I will do all these regulative principles, and I will chant 16 rounds. We make a promise, right? So then we say, "I will do it, you know, for the rest of my life." Is that also ahankar, or what kind of understanding should we have?
No, it's not ahankar. It means that what I will do, while promising to the spiritual master that I will chant 16 rounds every day of my life, I'm promising that I will remind myself 1,728 times every day that I am the servant of the Lord. Because we are chanting mantra 1,728 times, 16 rounds. Basically, we are promising him that we will remember that I am the servant of the Lord. And this consciousness of I is not so prominent, because in any case, this consciousness will be there. The spirit soul has this ahankar, has the ego. The ego is there. But what we are trying to do, we are trying to change our ego from false ego into real ego. And the false ego is the ego of the Lord, and the real ego is the ego of the servant. So we are not only promising the spiritual master to chant, we are also promising the spiritual master to chant in proper consciousness. But chanting in proper consciousness, Srila Prabhupada explains that when we chant like a child, when the child is crying for his mother, "Mama, mama." So that's the mood in which we should chant. And this is the mood which is devoid of ahankar. The little baby does not have a separate false ego. His false ego is totally, his ego is totally connected with the ego of his mother. And when he is separated from the mother, he feels deprived because he is not complete. And therefore he cries. Because he feels something is wrong. So in the same way, when we chant, we should chant in this ego, not the separate ego, but the ego in connection with the Lord. We do have ego. We will always have ego. We're separate. We're separate parts and parcels of the Lord. But this ego has to be in connection with the Lord. And when we say, "I will chant," it means I will be connected with the Lord at least for the time while I'm chanting. So this is not false.
Could you also call this ego your identity?
Yeah. Ego means my identity. Ego means my concept or my understanding of myself. And the false ego is my understanding of myself as material body, independent on the world. And this is technically called pride. You know, because we, whatever we achieve in this world, whatever, you know, body we have, it kind of makes us proud. This said that when a pauper, when a poor man has one coin, he is proud of this coin. And a rickshawwala in India gets a few rupees, you know, he becomes so proud. And our pride or false ego, false identity is connected. See, what is our false identity? False identity is our ability to project our ego upon everything which we possess. And people have tendency to expand their ego. They feel better if they have more. If I have one house, it's nice. If I have two houses, it's better. If I have three houses, it's much better. If I have many cars, it's better. We don't need many cars. We only need one. We don't need big houses. We only need little place to sleep. But we feel good about it because our ego is projected. You know, our false ego, false identity, it's not only I. It's everything which I have, which I possess. And it's false because in reality it doesn't belong to me. You know, no matter how much I try, it's not mine really. It belongs to God. So the real identity is to understand that nothing in this world belongs to me, but I belong to God. This is the real identity. This is the real ego. I belong to God. I am connected with God. And if I try to act from this concept, that whatever I do will not create bad consequences. It will be karma-less action. But whatever I do in a false conception that I am this body and whatever belongs to this body, me also, is an extension of myself. Like also people consider their children as the extension of themselves. And when the children dare to act contrary to what they want, they're really upset. You know? We all know our parents become upset with us when we act not according to their will. Why? Because they think you're me. How you can act contrary to my will? You are extension of my ego. But it's all false identities which people have, false place. The real, unchangeable identity, this all identity, and when something happens with the part of us which we think is a part of us, our house burns, or our car breaks, or our children go away, or something happens with our dear and near ones, they die. You know, this is identity crisis. Because the part of our identity is no more. That's why people so upset about it. But the unchangeable identity which we have, the eternal identity which we have, is the identity of the servant of the Lord, who belongs to the Lord. And nothing can happen with this identity. And when something is happening with what we so-called possess, we are not upset with it so much, because we know my identity is not changed. There's no identity crisis at that point. So that's what it is.
В одной из своих лекций вы говорили, что в этом мире существуют две категории людей. Это фаталисты и люди, которые считают, что все в этом мире может быть сам всего этого. Но и тот путь, и второй путь неправильный. Расскажите еще, пожалуйста, о третьем пути правильном.
Okay. The question is that once I told that there are two categories of people in this world. That people who are like fatalists. They're all totally dependent on, you know, they think nothing depends on me, everything depends on the providence. And there is another category of people who think that, you know, everything depends on me. I am the creator of my own destiny. Some people are totally dependent on the destiny, some people are totally trying to reject the destiny, but both are wrong. The question is, what is the correct version of it? The correct version is that nothing depends on me, but still I have to act in a proper consciousness. This is in gist what is explained here. Nothing depends on me. Everything depends on God, but at the same time, I'm trying my best. And this is somewhat contradictory understanding, but this is the only correct understanding. Nothing depends on me, but I'm trying my best. How is that? Why should you try your best? Because our understanding is that I always belong to God. God is working from me. And this proper consciousness is explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita when he says to Arjuna, Nimitta Matram Bhava Savya Sacha. He says, you become the instrument in my hands. I am the doer. I am doing everything from behind the scenes. But I am doing it through you. You become the instrument. You allow me to act through you. So when we have the proper consciousness is the consciousness by which we say yes to the Lord, by allowing Him to act through us. Like there is this famous mantra in Sanskrit, which everyone knows. This is the famous esoteric mantra, Om. And yogis, they go to the forest and to Himalayas and they say Om, 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 Om. But the meaning of Om mantra, who knows what Om means? Om means yes. And basically when these people go to the forest, they say yes, 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 yes. And there is a very deep philosophy behind it. The deep philosophy behind this is that we say yes to God. Now we say no to God. He's trying to act through us, we say no. I'm my mom. Like sometimes a little child, you know, the grown-up adult is trying to help him, you know, and the child says, no, I will do it myself. So in the same way us, we are trying to be on our own. And in this way we say no to God. But in reality the proper consciousness is to say yes. I'm your instrument, please act through me. I will try my best, I will serve you, and whatever you will do, I will accept. I will say yes to whatever will happen with me. Yes.
Could you even explain about, like, if something good happens to us, we are thanking God. But like you told us, we should celebrate our difficulties.
Usually when something good happens with us, we become very proud. We say it's because of me. Superficially we say, thank you God, but at the same time I was clever. I did it. And when something bad happens with us, we try to, you know, blame everyone else. When something is good happening with us, we say, yes, that's me. When something is bad happening to us, we say, no, that's everyone else, that's not me. So this is not correct. The correct understanding, whatever good happens with us, we should say thank to God, and whatever bad happens to us, we should also say thank to God. Because you never know, it may seem to be bad, at this particular moment, but on a long term and long distance, it will prove to be something useful. You know, nothing bad can happen to spiritual life. Krishna says himself in Bhagavad Gita, Kauntei Pradijanahinami Bhakta Pranashyati, I will protect your spiritual consciousness. So if we want to keep our spiritual consciousness intact, that Krishna will give all the facilities to us. If something bad is happening to our spiritual life, it's not God, it's us. You know, and the proper consciousness is like this. We have to be thankful in any situation of our life. But if something is bad is happening to me, we have to really find the fault in ourselves. In one sense, the spiritual consciousness is contrary to the material consciousness. Material consciousness is, I already described, something good is happening, that's me. Something bad is happening, that's God. But the spiritual consciousness means if something good is happening, that's God. If something bad is happening, that's me. So if something bad is happening with our spiritual life, it's me. And, you know, we can very clearly see it. It's me. If we want to remain, to keep our spiritual consciousness, we will be able to keep it. And Krishna will help us by all means. And in fact, he has been helping us all the time. And whatever is happening with us, if our spiritual consciousness suffers because of some external happening with us, for example, you may say, and Prabhupada actually he gave this example about Germany. Oftentimes in lectures he gave the example that after Second World War, when Germany was defeated, so many people became atheists. Because during the World War, people would go to the churches and they would pray to the Lord, please give us this, please give us victory, please. And this didn't happen. So you may say, because of this defeat in the Second World War, something bad happened with their spiritual consciousness. No. It didn't happen with their spiritual consciousness because they didn't have spiritual consciousness to start with. When we go to God and we say to God, please give us something. And some kind of subconsciously we make this condition of our relationship with God. If you do this, you know, then okay, I will consider. If you don't do this, forget it. I'm not going to serve you. This is not spiritual consciousness. This is not even good material consciousness. You know, this is a very bad consciousness. This is not spiritual consciousness. When we come to God, in real terms, it means that we are not coming on our terms. We are coming on His terms. And it means, no matter what happens, I'm yours. I belong to you. And you can do whatever you like with me. If you want to kill me, okay, kill me. No problem. Here. If you want to glorify me, you know, I will take it. It's a little more difficult. But can try. You know, when we come to God, we have to come on His terms. It means that we surrender. We accept Him. And this consciousness will never suffer. This consciousness will never suffer. If it's sincere, whatever happens with us.
Мы всегда пытаемся заниматься преданным служением, мы пытаемся служить. И в определенный момент я понимаю, что это служение приносит какое-то удовольствие. Потом возникает мысль, пытаюсь ли я служить, потому что Кришна, то все-таки я сам хочу наслаждаться. Как понять, что Кришна ли это исходит из моего желания?
The question is that we are trying to serve, and sometimes while serving we feel some happiness. And sometimes we can catch ourselves that maybe we are serving because we want some happiness from the service. Maybe this is the reason for this. How we can understand what is our real motivation? Well, in 99.9% cases, we only serve because we want some happiness from the service. because we want bigger happiness from the service. You know, all these people, especially those who are practicing Krishna consciousness, they are the most clever people in the world. They want to get happiness by very unusual method. But we are still selfish within ourselves. I will tell you a little story. Can I tell you a story? It's a very interesting story. It's a real story about one servant of a Raja. There was, you know, some time ago there was a little king in India, and he had a clever servant. And the servant was serving him, but he was always thinking, you know, how can I get his treasury? And ultimately he devised some means how to get treasury. He was some kind of distant, little distant servant, but he found out all the ways, he stole the keys. And, you know, one night he was stealthily going to the treasury house to steal the wealth of his master. And he stopped near the bedroom of the king, and he saw the light. And he saw that the king is talking with the queen. And he started hearing what the king is talking with the queen, and the queen was nagging, and the queen was really angry with the king. And the queen said, you know, well, what kind of husband you are? We have our daughter. And you don't give our daughter in marriage so far, it's so late, you know, you have to give our daughter in marriage. And ultimately the king, he said, okay, I tried it, it didn't work, I couldn't find the proper match to her, but tomorrow I will give her in marriage. And I will give half of my treasure and of my wealth, of my kingdom, to the husband, and the husband will be the first yogi which I will see in the nearby forest. And this servant was listening, and he said, no, this is a good idea. I should not go to the treasury now, because how much I can take with me? And the risk is always there that I will be caught. It's better if I pretend a yogi, and tomorrow I will get, in a very legal way, the half kingdom, daughter, everything, so that's a good idea. So he went to the forest, and he changed the clothes, he became a yogi, you know, he put tilak, you know, he was sitting there, you know. He specifically sat in a very prominent place so that the king would not miss him. So, and he sometimes, he was looking Ultimately, the king came, and, you know, when the king came, he sat like this for a long time, you see. Yeah. For some time you can pretend. He was in complete samadhi, and the king was in so much awe and reverence. He said, oh, finally, you know, and the guy was so happy inside. You know. And then the king said, you know, my dear sir, can I invite you to the palace? And the king took him and he brought him to the palace and he set him on a throne. And he washed his feet and he called the queen and, you know, he was fanning him. And then ultimately he approached him with folded hands and he said, my dear sir, I have a very humble request. I have my daughter. She's a beautiful girl. Please take my daughter and half of my kingdom. And at that point, the clever servant started thinking, you know, I just pretended to be a yogi. And he treated me so nicely. What will happen with me if I become real yogi? Now if I get this, you know, girl, you know, I will only get the girl. What, how much I can get if I become real yogi? So he said, no, I will not take your daughter. I will become real yogi. And then all the kings will wash my feet. This is the real motivation of a yogi. But this is the corrupt intelligence, which we have. We can be sure that in most of the cases we are selfish still. But as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, through practice and through renunciation, through some honesty, through honest self-analysis of our heart, we can try to understand our motivations and ultimately purify the motivations. All spiritual life, from beginning till end, it's very deep psychological self-analysis. To understand the real motivation of our heart and to make it completely pure and selfless. I'm the servant of the Lord because this is what I am. This is my eternal identity. And this is what I should do. And in the Nectar of Devotion, there is a nice little story about one servant of Krishna who was fanning Krishna. And he was fanning Krishna, and at one point he became so ecstatic, the ecstasy, the great spiritual bliss came to him because he was doing it to Krishna himself. The most beautiful God was sitting right in front of him, and he almost fainted. But then he checked this feeling of happiness within his heart, and he said, "This will be a hindrance for my service, so I shouldn't feel happy. I should serve." This is from the Nectar of Devotion. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
I want to make a short announcement. Last time when Bhakti Vigyana Maharaj was in Germany, he did a small interview in Cologne.
I haven't seen it.
So we have published a magazine, Sri Fatma Prabhu and myself. It's called Gorni Times. And in this magazine we bring a great 10 pages about the temple in Moscow. And also we published this interview with Bhakti Vigyana Maharaj, and in that text you will find more information about his life, how he came to Krishna consciousness, about the history of the Russian devotees in Russia, very exciting history, and also about the new temple project in Moscow, which difficulties they have to face. So we're looking very much forward to this day to present you this magazine for your pleasure, for Srila Prabhupada's pleasure. Hare Krishna.
Maharaj ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanandi ji ki jai.